When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the 147 podcast with me, sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the former Triple Crown winner and snooker world champion, the magician, Sean Murphy. And we record this as the dust has settled on the Crucible once again. In fact, the dust has settled on another snooker season. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm very good, actually. How are you? How is life back at home now the madness has finished?
Yeah, very good. Very good. Lovely to be back home. Was in Sheffield for a long time, you know, when you came. I mean, the tournament's 17 days, but with the build up and everything, obviously I made the draw. I was in England for that. And like, I was in Sheffield and in the hotel for over 3 weeks, I think, all told. And geez, that's enough for anyone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long time. Hey, listen, let's not complain about being involved in snooker and working in snooker, but it's a long time to be in one place, and we're not used to that, are we?
Absolute marathon of the mind and body, the World Championships, that's what they say. It's a long time to be there. That's one of the challenges, of course. And, yeah, I mean, what a championship it was, by the way. It was one of the best ever, I think. What a few weeks we had, and the show that everyone put on was just absolutely phenomenal. And Luca, well, a star is born.
Oh, a star is bald. Did you say? A star is born, yeah. Amazing. Absolutely incredible. You know, I tweeted, I think during the semi-finals, that I think this is becoming the best world championship in my memory. And a few people are like, oh, yeah, 85 final, 85. Yeah, that was one game. That was one game of that final. For me, this world championship had absolutely everything. And I think that was actually summed up by the two semi-finals, because the two semi-finals for me were perfect. You had one semi-final, C against Luca, which was just crazy attacking snooker, which, let's be honest, it's a dream to watch. When they're each taking on all those long pots and getting them most of the time. And then the other semi-final, you've got the complete and utter grind of Mark Allen against Mark Selby. But what a match to watch. I mean, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but it's called snooker. It's not called potting. And for me, that game was heaven for me, because it was like watching two blokes playing chess on a snooker table. You know, it doesn't get any better than that.
No, well, it was a point we were trying to make in the studio when I think John Parrott and I were sat there one night or something in one of the sessions of the Selby-Allen semi-final. Yes, I understand it's not everyone's cup of tea. I get that. But the reason those matches go like the way they do and you have so many of those 30, 40-minute frames is because they're both bloody good.
Yeah.
At playing snooker. And they're not going to offer up those simple opportunities straight away off the bat. A lot of those frames had 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes sometimes before a ball had even been potted. And if you get two chess grandmasters going at it, you know, you have to get into the battle before the fight gets resolved. And, yeah, the carnage between Brussel and Seizure was just, like, breathtaking. But the absolute purest match play snooker on offer in the other semi-final was something to behold. It truly was.
Oh, it was brilliant. And as I say, I think the semi-finals, for me, really summed up the whole championship because it had everything, didn't it? You know, we had Si Jiahui, your old mate, coming through and really, you know, shocking people all along the way. To a lot of people inside snooker, actually, not that massive a shock. Because we've all known he's coming. We've all known he's on his way.
I did tell you.
You did. Yeah.
Well, I told you how good he was.
You proved it a few times.
I tried to get him banned 18 months ago. I mean, unbelievable performance from everyone. But let's look into Seizure for a minute. Like, the performance to get there in the first place. Obviously, then we knew, you know, I witnessed the draw. The draw wasn't fixed. but there was just a massive crushing sense of inevitability that we were going to get drawn against each other, following my very misguided comments 18 months ago. I'm very happy to admit that. And you know what? I thought we served up one of the best matches of the entire tournament. The match we went at each other, like, as I said in my press conference afterwards, I played a lot worse than that and won at the Crucible. And if I played like that for the rest of my life, I'd be very, very happy. I just didn't win. And then having beat me, he rolls on through the tournament. He beats Milkins, McGill, and should have beat Luca.
He should. Absolutely, he should have done.
Should have won.
He should have done. I mean, it was there. It was the finishing line was there. But how often do we see that when the finishing line is there? That's when it gets tough. That's when it gets sticky. That's when it gets hard. And Lucas seemed to make a bit of a tournament of being miles behind and all of a sudden flying up on the rails and doing it. Which is why I thought in the final, Selby's played a blinder here. He's let Brussel get ahead. He's not used to that. He won't know what to do.
Well, I can assure you that's not what they think. But I take your point. It was ironic, wasn't it? Having trailed in so many matches and obviously 10-6 down to O'Sullivan. He wins 7 on the bounce. All that way, 14-5 behind against Seizure Hui. Comes back and wins the match. Then finds himself 16-10 ahead in the final and collapses.
Yeah.
And you could see, a bit like happened to Seizure Hui, we were all saying through the week, there will come a stage where he realises what he's achieving and the enormity of this experience lands on his shoulders. And you could see it happen with Si, and I think you could also see it happen with Luca. The most impressive frame for me of Luca's entire tournament was the penultimate frame.
Yes. Yeah.
Having withstood that Selby onslaught, to then stand up and be counted and make a 50-odd break, that for me was the most impressive contribution of the entire event, because it's that old sporting cliche. You know, it's not about how hard you can get hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and then get up and keep moving. Yeah. And to do that was incredibly impressive.
Yeah, it really was. It was it was amazing stuff. I've got to say, was it the first mini session on the Monday in the afternoon? Was that the one where he won all four frames and there was three centuries in there? And one of them was a real big one as well. And I'm watching him play and they kept cutting to Selby in the other chair. And Mark was just kind of sat there almost in awe at times of what Luca was doing, because he didn't do a lot wrong. I think he made one error. He made one mistake in one frame. The other three, Luca got in from long pots and just dominate, it's just cleared up.
We were all saying backstage, and like, I've got my mates texting me, how do you think this is going to go? Luca was 9-4 up. They finished the first day, he's only one frame ahead, 9-8. And the way Selby had just got his teeth into him and clawed his way back, I thought the match was over, Phil, to be honest. I thought we were going to see a Selby win on Monday. I saw nothing else other than a Selby victory. I thought Luca would really struggle, as did I in 2015. I went to bed halfway through the final, leading Stuart Bingham 9-8, but I had been 9-4 or 8-4 up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I found it really hard to shrug that disappointment. I thought Luca would suffer the same. And when he came out for the third session on the Monday afternoon, I expected nothing else than a Selby procession. And for Luca to come out and play four frames from the absolute gods was breathtaking.
Do you believe what he said about that he'd just literally been on the lash in the run-up to it and had 15 minutes practice for each match or not? Do you think there's a bit of bravado there?
I think there may have been a little bit of, you know, editorial pleasure in the 15 minutes. But I think the general sort of ethos of his thought process, I get to some degree. I think there's a bit to be said for once you've reached a certain level of competence in your hands. You know, there aren't many players who spend any time at all looking at the mental side of the game. And being in a good mental state, being prepared mentally, being in a happy frame of mind. And as we know, you know, emotions and how you feel depends, you know, that affects your thought processes and decisions. And like, there's a lot to be said for making sure you're in a good place.
Yeah.
And he made a lot of good decisions, didn't he, in that fortnight?
So not practicing and being on the lash and then up to the tunnel. I thought Matt Williams had patented that preparation. Has he not licensed that, no?
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy White made a career of that.
He did. It's right. And now while we're talking about the whirlwind, by the way, we're going to get onto the season shortly. What a season he's had. He stayed on tour, no wildcard.
I mean, it's incredible. Just mathematically, it's phenomenal. I think that's actually only bettered by Cesar Wee.
Yeah, possibly.
But who comes in and finishes at 36?
We'll get on to that later on, because later on in this episode of the podcast, we are going to have the first annual, massively prestigious 147 Podcast Awards, our end of season awards, which is going to be rather glitzy and glamorous. But just sticking with the world.
Do you think in years to come, when we're on episode 475, the players and the officials and the refs, they won't be bothered about being inducted into Halls of Fame, as John Virgo was during the championships, and rightly so.
Yes, absolutely.
Congratulations to JV. They won't be bothered about WST awards.
It'll be all about these.
Only about our awards.
It'll be all about these. It will be who's going to win the awards dished out by the winners of Celebrity Hunted. That's what it's going to be. When we get on that program, we win Celebrity Hunted, which, let's face it, they wouldn't catch us, okay? We've said this on social media. They wouldn't catch us. Ali Carter meets us on an airstrip nearby with his plane. We go over to France for 2 weeks on the lash, come back and pick up the prize. It's all done. It's finished. That's the plan. It's done. They're going to be sat there years to come.
What we should do is we should substitute in for one of those detectives. We should substitute Neil Robertson in. He can't find his...
he couldn't find Barnsley, could he?
Fill in the blank. You know? He can't find anything.
Anyway, look, we're going to come on to the awards later on. But just looking back at the Worlds then. So, Luca Brasel, immense. Incredible. As you said, a star is born. The first player from mainland Europe to win the Worlds. He bookended the season. I think he won Championship League at the start of the season. He's won the Worlds at the end of it. He got to the final of the English Open, where Selby beat him in that one. Recent years, he's won the Scottish Open that was over in Llandudno, weirdly. He is, I was going to say, a star of the future. He is a star, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a bona fide star. As we said during the coverage, very streaky though.
Yes.
You know, and for him, his challenge is going to be starting out next year now as the world champion, with all of that pressure that comes with that and maintaining that level. Now, he's obviously going to go into it the next season with a massive boost of confidence, and a confident Luca Brasel is a dangerous Luca Brasel. But he is a streaky player. There's no question about that. And we've seen what he can be like when he's on form, and we've also seen what he can be like when he's not on form. So I think for Team Brasel, it's going to be a case of trying to understand what worked and how do we repeat it?
Yeah,
because he's boosted himself way up the rankings. You know, he's in close proximity for an assault at the number one position.
Yep,
and you know, what a potential season he's got ahead of him.
You mentioned Team Brassell there, and that is very much the case. His parents, particularly his dad, Carlo, is always at events with him. Lovely, lovely man. Often have a coffee with him.
Yeah.
There was a funny moment, actually. I think it was Milton Keynes after the crowds had been let back in. It might be the English Open. I'm not sure. Luca was playing, I think, Ronnie O'Sullivan, and I was warming the crowd up beforehand. And I did the usual thing, you know, right, come on then, who do we think is going to win? Will it be the Belgian bullet, Luca Brissell?
Yeah.
And there was literally two people clapped or cheered, and I just went, oh, come on. And I looked straight in front of me, and three rows up, dead centre, there's Carlo Brissell, Luca's dad, grinning at me from the crowd, because we often have a coffee together, and he's sat there grinning at me from the crowd. And I said to the crowd, I said, ladies and gentlemen, I said, if you look right in front of me here, you see a gentleman with a beard. That's Carlo Brissell, better known as Luca's dad. And look at what you've just all done. I said, now with that in mind, that his dad's actually sat amongst you, who do we think is going to win? Will it be Luca Brissell? And they all cheered. I was like, thank goodness for that. It was brilliant. And chuff for Carlo. It's a team effort.
Can we just stop there? Because I've just come up with a potential new feature.
Oh, go on.
I mean, it's potentially very short-lived because Luca Brissell and Carlo Brissell win the feature immediately. But we spend our rest of our lives looking for number two in the rankings. What we're going to do is snooker players who most look like one of their parents.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely looks like his dad.
But, I mean, they did an interview in one of the intervals with Carlo Brissell, and if you just looked away and been a bit blurry-eyed, you'd have just sworn it was an interview with Luca. It's just they are the absolute spitting image of each other.
There's only one other that would take that crown.
Who rivals that?
Well, it's Stan and you, obviously.
Stan and I, yeah. Yeah, we're only separated by DNA tests.
Yeah, it's Stan and you, and if the Jeremy Kyle show was still here, that would be proven. we all know that one.
Rest in peace, Jerry Springer, as well, by the way.
Yeah, that came from nowhere, didn't it? But
from nowhere.
Yeah.
The original, the OG.
He was the OG of all that nonsense, wasn't he? Yeah. Of all those programs that make us all feel better about our own lives.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, yeah, Luca Brissell, absolutely tremendous. A word for Mark Selby. Reached the final again. He won it 2 years ago. Reached the final again. Playing really great stuff. Really hope Vicky's all right. I think from what he said since, I think she's sort of on her way back from it, which is good news, because she is lovely. But great to see Mark back properly, competing right at the top of the game.
Yeah, and as pretty much everyone in the snooker world will have seen by the videos that were circulated afterwards, the after party was in full swing. He and everyone was in great form. I have to, you know, and I don't think you can't really praise somebody enough for stuff like that, because obviously I've only won the championship once and I've lost in it three further times. That loss in that final of that championship is the hardest match. It's the hardest defeat to take of any season of any match ever in the world. And so then, you know, once you've lost it, you've got to do all your media commitments. You've then got to, you know, greet and meet everyone and all the rest. And there is it is incumbent on you to go to the after party, which frankly you're not in the mood to do. And so to go put a smile and shake hands with all the sponsors and, you know, the staff and everyone from the Crucible and dignitaries from Sheffield and, you know, to do all the right things. And to not refuse a photo with anyone, just be polite and be it was real good to see.
It was classy. Very classy.
And we ended up on the piano in the reception in the hotel at 6 a.m. They were bringing the breakfast service out around us.
I can't believe you made Robbie bring your piano, by the way.
Carnage.
is there truth in the room? I'd heard that Mark actually went to the DJ and asked him to play, was it We Are the Champions for Luca?
I'm not sure about that, but I know that Luca, when it got to the phrase "no time for losers," I know he wagged his finger in Mark's face.
Wow,
which was extreme, but all was taken in good humour. Listen, when you win, to the victor go the spoils.
Yeah,
It was, no, in all seriousness, you know, credit to Mark Selby, because there are plenty of other players who haven't lost with the good grace that he did.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, he's got four of those championships tucked away in his house, polishing those trophies. So he knows what it feels like on both sides. He did all the right things and was in good humour and went home to Leicester with a very large headache, I'm sure.
I can imagine. Do you not find it crazy, though? I know it's the ranking systems, it's how it works. He's runner-up in the world, taking home, is it 200,000?
I think so, yeah.
And he drops in the rankings because his 500,000 from 2 years ago comes up. And it just, I look at the rankings like, that seems so weird. He's just reached the final of the world and he dropped in the rankings. Yeah. Absolute madness. Two 147s in the championship, one for Kieran, one for Mark, again, classy from Kieran, after Mark got his, what was it, I woke up 30 grand light this morning. You've had that happen a couple of times this year. It's killer, isn't it?
Happened to me at the World Grand Prix this year. Yep. We had to stay in Cheltenham for the day of the final. Couldn't get out of Cheltenham, so we stayed there for the day. We went on a bit of a pub crawl, and we ended up in a pub as the last session of the final was starting. I went to the bar. I had 15 grand in my back pocket from the highest break that week. Went to the bar. Whilst I was ordering the first round of drinks, I think it was Trump or Mark Allen equaled the high break. So the round cost me 7,500. Sat down with our pints, drank them, went to the bar to get another round of drinks. And whilst I was at the bar, somebody beat the high break and the round cost me 15 grand. So, yeah, it's a bit of a sickener.
It is. Can I just make it clear, just so snooker players don't start getting mugged, they don't really walk around with 15 grand in their pocket in the pub, okay? That doesn't, in fact, believe me, I've been to a pub with Sean. I don't remember him having any money on him. yeah, they don't. But two 147s, I mean, the standard was phenomenal.
Absolutely incredible. And the other thing as well, like from a technical point of view, like they were both phenomenal breaks.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, Mark Selby's in particular, he was never out of position.
Now, Kieran was in his. Kieran was, and some of those pots he got to get it back on track were just ridiculous.
Yeah, Kieran came out with some shots that were just magical, like he really did. And even the final pink to black, you know, was smelly.
Yeah.
You know, twice across the table with check side to get back on the black, and he played it to perfection. Meanwhile, Mark Selby's break, the first ever in a final.
Yep.
Only the second player to make one in the one table arena at the Crucible, following Stephen Hendry about 4,000 years ago. So that's another of Stephen's records that's slowly being eroded away, as I enjoyed reminding him whilst I was sat next to him in the studio.
Yeah, he looked delighted with that as well.
Delighted with it. But yeah, unbelievable. And obviously, we were in the bubble studio in the arena at the time. The atmosphere in the Crucible was off the scale.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, I was watching on TV and that came across. It came across on television just how great it was and just how good the atmosphere was. It was just, yeah, phenomenal and a great standard. In case anyone's thinking, we're going to come onto the pockets. All right. If people are thinking, oh, it's easy because of the big pockets, we're going to come on to that, okay? A few other things to cover first. We've talked about Xi Jiahui. He is going to be a top player for a number of years to come. Absolutely convinced of that fact.
Absolutely convinced of it. Interestingly as well, I had a couple of negative comments slip into my DMs, you know, in the wake of my defeat. You know, how did you lose to somebody like Xi Jiahui with no B game? He's got no safety game, this, that, and the other. It's completely not true.
Yep.
And for somebody so young, he's got actually a very well-rounded game for somebody so, you know, inexperienced. And I mean that positively as a compliment. Like all young players, he just chooses to attack.
Yep.
But I tried to tie him up in nuts. Tried to tie him up in knots.
Tie him up in knots?
Yeah, against the rules. Tried to tie him up in knots and couldn't.
No.
And I think with, you know, as I say, with now, you know, bags of confidence of what an amazing season, up to 36 in the rankings, could now just kick on and go from strength to strength. And I think you're going to see some very special play from him in the next seasons.
Absolutely. Listen, the hearing's ongoing. We're going to lose a lot of Chinese players from the tour for some time, I believe. But we've got Xi Jiahui, we've got Pang Zhengxu coming through. We've got some really, really strong Chinese players on the up. And I think there's this new wave of Chinese players are going to make a massive dent. They're going to cause some real damage, not in a good way.
I think this point needs to be made. I think this sort of young crop of Chinese players that are here and still coming through, I think they deserve a lot of praise for carrying on whilst all of this other crap's been going on in the background, whilst they've had to be, you know, subjected to abuse at the shootout. You know, I witnessed a lot of these players getting shouted at from the crowd. If they missed a ball, people were accusing them of missing on purpose. Obviously, social media does its thing. These lads have had nothing to do with the alleged offences of the 10 players that are suspended at the moment. And for them to just keep their heads down, go about their business professionally and churn out these performances deserves a lot of praise.
Yeah, absolutely. And we mentioned Carlo Brissell and Team Brissell. I know C is with Victoria's Academy in Sheffield, and gets that support, that backing, that help from Victoria and the team there. And it's clearly paying dividends. So, yeah, keep an eye out. But that young man is an absolute star. Another player I'd like to highlight, Jack Jones. Now, Jack Jones came through qualifying. Again, young man, good talent. I don't think anyone saw that coming, though, did they?
I mean, probably least of all himself.
Yep.
Like, there's been. I mean, everyone's watched Jack Jones for the last few seasons and thought, geez, he looks great when he plays. He strikes the ball lovely, lovely technician, good cueist, really nice guy. Keeps himself to himself. I don't know anyone with a bad word to say about Jack Jones. But I don't think anyone was thinking, geez, there might be a performance coming here from Jack Jones. Yep. And the thing that threw me, the thing that unsettled me about the whole thing was how calm he looked.
Yeah. He never looked overawed at all, did he?
And we were saying, watching him and commentating, and said the same thing about Xi Jiahui, it was, somebody needs to tell these, but this is supposed to be difficult, like... Making your debut there and coming through and never won a game there, it's supposed to be hard work, this. Meanwhile, you're watching him make another 130 clearance. He dispatches Robertson with, not ease, but, you know, when Robertson turned the screw, he just turned it back. Yeah. And you're like, well, I mean, really? This is phenomenal. Where has this been?
That said, before this championship, who else hadn't won a game at the Crucible?
Of course. Well,
Luca Brissell. You know, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
But no, Jack Jones, again, hopefully he kicks on. Like, as we said with C, hopefully he kicks on from this. Hopefully he can take real confidence from what he's shown there and replicate that. Consistency is absolutely key, isn't it? He needs to find that. He needs to bottle whatever he had in Sheffield and take that into next season and try and get that as his consistent game. Because if he does that, again, he'll go deep.
And a bit like Xi Jiahui, Jack will have learned more about himself in the final session of his last match, as will Xi Jiahui in that final session against Brissell. They'll have learned more in those two sessions about themselves and how to handle those moments than they'll have learned in the last 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Right, a couple of things I'd like to talk about the championship. Protesters, I don't really want to give them too much oxygen, if I'm honest. They caused a mess. People have the right to protest. Yes, their cause is a worthy one and everything else. Was it right to do it at the snooker? Pfft, I don't know. Anything you'd like to say on that, Sean?
Well, I mean, I was actually asked by BBC to front up and go on and debate the whole thing on the Nicky Campbell show on 5 Live and BBC Two the morning after.
Yep.
With one of the heads of Just Stop Oil. And there was, you know, we took listeners' questions and all sorts. And it was an interesting one because, you know, you think about peaceful protests and all. I'm not sure how peaceful that was. at the way. It caused a lot of disruption. It, you know, there wasn't much people. You know, what about all the people who, you know, bought tickets and had made special trips and once in a lifetime this? And, you know, it didn't just disrupt. You know, it did cause quite a lot of aggravation. However, I do understand the point they're making, the wider point, which is, you know, governments and institutions aren't doing enough.
Yeah.
And they are trying to make the headlines. Snooker, as I said on that debate show, snooker ought to be, you know, sort of counting itself favourably in that they chose us as the biggest event in the world happening that week. They chose us as their platform. And I can tell you this from the media that I saw at the cruise, it didn't do snooker any harm at all.
It put it on the front pages. I'm going to say one thing about climate protesters, because something I witnessed a couple of years ago in York, there was an Extinction Rebellion protest in York. They, in my book, rather disgustingly drew their logo all over York Minster in chalk. I know chalk washes off, but all the same, it's disgusting. I'm in town with my little girl and my daughter. We're walking back to the car park, and there's two of these protesters in front of us, two young girls, 15, 16 years old, with their placards and all this, very pleased with the demonstration they've done in town. And we'd packed up at Sainsbury's supermarket in York, and we're walking back, following them back from town to the car park, where they got picked up by one of them's dads in a Range Rover. Kind of blows the whole point, doesn't it? When you're getting driven home in a Range Rover from a climate change protest, doesn't really work, I'm afraid. And there's things come out about this guy since. I think Barry Hearn handled it very, very well. Like you said, I feel very sorry for those people who were going to Crucible for their once-in-a-lifetime trip or whatever, and it got spoilt. And that is what happened. So hopefully we don't see a repeat of that. Now, another thing. We've had quite a few messages from people talking about empty seats. The first two rows at the Crucible empty for a lot of time during matches, particularly before the semi-finals, which was due to the Century Club, the new initiative World Snooker have done, where they've got the Century Club, similar to the Masters, where there's a lounge, and then they come out into the arena and take the seats, but some of them don't. We've had quite a lot of people commenting on that, making a real negative about it.
Yeah, and it's a negative that I understand. As soon as I heard that World Snooker Tour were going to be implementing Century Club at the Crucible this year, obviously they don't have the same facilities on hand there as they have at the Masters, where Century Club is in the arena. And if they don't take their seats, in fact, I'm not convinced that a Century Club ticket at the Masters comes with an arena seat. I don't think it does.
No, it doesn't, because I actually did a session in there for your game against Neil Robertson. And it doesn't. In at the Masters, you're in a soundproof box with a bar where you can eat your food, you can talk, you can drink while you're watching the play in the arena. Yes, you're a little bit far away from the table, but you can see everything. Everyone gets a good view there anyway. For me, they're trying something new, which has to be applauded. You know, they're trying to make a facility for those people who want to watch snooker that way. Yes, it's got its flaws in the Crucible, because the Crucible isn't a perfect venue. It's an amazing venue, but it's not perfect for that kind of thing. Whereas at the Masters, you can do that. You can build a box to put people in.
I flagged it with WST as soon as I heard, I think about maybe a month before the event happened, that they were going to do that. And I said, well, you know, you will end up with the people who've purchased the hospitality packages. They'll be in the hospitality, enjoying the hospitality, and they won't be sat in their seats in the arena, and you'll have empty seats, and it will look terrible. That's exactly what happened. You know, I'm sure they'll learn lessons from it. There's, you know, from my point of view, there's no reason why the people in Century Club couldn't have had access to tickets further back from the front.
Yep.
That's easier to get to, easy to get out of if you want to nip for another glass of champagne. I don't believe the tickets went unsold. Every time I went in Century Club, it was full. I think it was deemed a success.
Yeah.
But you shoot yourself in the foot by giving them a front row seat. There was no need to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that I can't speak for WST, but I would hope that they learn from that going forward. But apart from that, I think it's great to see them trying their best to drag snooker into the 21st century of hospitality and commercialism, because that is what makes sport go around. You know, but the old days of the purity of the fan who buys his or her ticket and they spend their 20, 30 pounds on it, those days have gone.
Yeah.
Whether that's right or wrong is up for debate, but it has gone.
Yeah.
And I think World Snooker Tour sold a lot of Century Club tickets. As I say, every time I went in to host the lounge or to meet and greet guests, it was packed. So I think it's here to stay.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And as you said, lessons will be learned from it. I'm absolutely certain of that. One thing World Snooker Tour do, they put the necks on the line, try new things, and they then review them and see how it's gone. So I'm sure lessons will be learned. I'm pretty sure we won't see a similar thing with empty seats again. I hope not anyway. Right, we are going to take a very, very short break, and then we're going to talk about the hot topic of big pockets.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. Now, during the championships, I asked on social media our listeners for questions, of which we're actually going to use. We're going to have a listeners questions special episode of the podcast because we've got dozens of them to answer, so we are going to have a special on them. However, we've got to address this because I would say for every 10 questions we got, 9 of them use the two words big and pockets.
Was that in relation to your wages?
It was in relation to your 15 grand that you're walking around pubs in Cheltenham with, actually.
And by the way, in Cheltenham, it doesn't go very far.
That's just you and Robbie for two beers. Yeah, it was big pockets, and it was quite funny. I think one person jumped straight on and said, "And don't trot out that old tired line of it's to do with the cloth," which interestingly, I think they sent that, and about 2 minutes later, I was watching the BBC coverage, and Steve Davis appeared with a template, with a pocket template, and he showed the template. And he said, "Look, these are templates. Templates are used for every tournament, bar Championship League and Champion of Champions, where they use different tables, use the wrestling tables." And he said, "These are the templates. That's what they use. The pockets are the same." And then he talked about the cloth, and I'm thinking, oh, that guy that's just tweeted us is going to be seething here. There were some shots. I mean, John Higgins played one shot and was on his way back to his chair and then went, "Oh, God, it's gone in," and went back to the table. There were a few. I did hear a few people mention in commentary about that the cloth they're using has just got some kind of sheen on it, some kind of finish on it, the oil that you've mentioned previously, which is making that massive difference. When it hits that jaw, it slides in as opposed to rattling and not going in. We did have an amazing message from someone about, they said, "Oh, it's been ruined by the pockets being too big and there not being enough century breaks." And I thought, wait up, that doesn't quite stack up, does it? Because surely if the pockets were too big, there'd be a century break every frame. So go on then, Sean, what's your take?
My take on it is that the pockets did appear to play more generously this year than I've ever seen. There's no getting away from that. It was certainly corner pockets anyway. I thought the middle pockets, as always. In fact, I think from a player's point of view, I think the middle pockets are getting smaller. I think they're getting shallower. And shallower is the word to use. What we look at, it's not, we don't look at the gap, the size between the jaws from the left and the jaw to the right. We're looking at the gap from the fall of the pocket to the back of the pocket, that distance. And in the middle pockets, that's certainly got shallower over the years. And the middles are, I think, more difficult than they've ever been. Down the cushions into the corner pockets, I saw pots that had no business going in, go in. The problem is that, you know, as you've just explained, I witnessed these tables being put together using these templates, that they were perfectly templated. The pockets were the same physical size as they are every week. And unfortunately, it is one of those situations where unless you've played on those professional table match conditions and witnessed what it's like with a brand new set of balls and a particularly what we call slippy cloth, and the cloth does vary from week to week, although it's the same brand from the same manufacturer, how it's stored and all, how it's transported, that all matters. When the cloth's at an event, it's on a roll. If that's kept out the back near a shutter door, if it's kept in a heated room, it retains more of its sheen, which is applied during the final cutting process. If you have a particularly slippy batch of cloth, the pockets perform more generously. I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know how you get around that. But there were shots like the John Higgins one. That was the significant one through the. He walked away.
Yeah.
It wasn't in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's face it, right? The template for the table's the same.
Yep.
The cushions are the same.
Yep.
The only variable, realistically, is the cloth. Now,
yep.
Or the balls, perhaps. Now, I've played on those tables. You know, I've had a knock on those tables. And they do, you know, if I go into my local club here in York, greatest city on earth, and it's a very, very different table. It plays completely differently. It does. It plays completely differently. And looking at a lot of the ones that did go in that you thought maybe shouldn't, I think a lot of it was to do with sliding off the cushions as opposed to bouncing off the cushions. They were sliding due to the cloth. So the person on social media that said, don't be blowing the clock, I'm really sorry, yeah. But
that is the answer, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think the other thing as well is, in the old days when we played on Riley Aristocrat tables, there was this, you hear it in the commentary all the time, commentators still say, oh, if you catch the near jaw, it doesn't go in. Now that was always true on a BCE table or a Riley Aristocrat. It's actually not true on a star table.
Yep.
Star tables are different. They're built slightly differently, and pots down cushions are actually better received by the pockets if you just clip the near jaw on the way through. If you aim far jaw, more of them stay out.
Yep.
That's been, the players have become wise to that over the years. So I think you're seeing a mixture of a particularly slippy, oily batch of cloth, which has that slip effect when the ball is rolled towards the pocket. And also that the players have worked it out that if they're playing the shots down to those pockets, it's actually better to hit them in and clip the near jaw on the way through. As alien as that sounds to most snooker folk, the star tables perform slightly differently to the tables they replaced. And some of those old guidelines just don't apply anymore.
Absolutely. Well, I know what you're going to tell us that you think, but at 147pod across all forms of social media, tell us we're wrong, because I get a good idea that you're going to. That was the World Championship. The World Championship was amazing. I've gone on record saying I think it's the best one I've seen. For me, it had absolutely everything. Again, at 147pod on social media, what did you think? Tell us what you thought. Now, we're going to come up with our end of season awards shortly. Just before we do, though, end of season rankings have come out. They are finalised. They made for pretty interesting reading. You've already mentioned Luca Brasel. Obviously, he's just won $500,000. So Ronnie O'Sullivan is at number one with 886,000. Just behind him, 9,500 behind him, Luca Brasel. He's very, very close, isn't he?
Very close, yeah. Very, very close.
Behind him, again, very close, 860,500, Mark Allen at the end of what's been an amazing season for him, which could only have been improved really by him winning the Worlds and beating Mark Selby in the semi and getting to the final. it was good to see Mark put in a good performance because his season had kind of tailed off a bit.
Yeah, I think, and he reaped the rewards on the 1 year list of being so far ahead so early, and you know, he was able to stave off late runs from players, you know, including myself, you know, just weren't able to catch him numerically. But yeah, you know, I think got a bit tired with the criticism Mark Allen's taken in the last few weeks. I found it a bit weird. You know, the idea of snooker is to win. It's our job. Now it is also incumbent on us to entertain. I get that, and some players are more sensitive to that than others. I just thought the criticism that Mark Allen has taken, whilst winning tournaments and winning marquee matches, and playing to his strengths and not others, I found baffling, to be completely honest. It might not be the snooker that it might not be the same style as Jack Lazowski. But I'm sure Mark's happy with the trophies and the hall that he's got at his house, like, you know.
100%. As I said earlier on, it's called snooker. It's not called potting, you know. And he's playing snooker, and he's playing snooker incredibly well. And don't get me wrong, he can pop balls with the very best in the world, and he does.
You know, who scored more centuries than Mark Allen this season?
Yeah.
If anyone.
I'll be honest, I don't know. But
no, so, you know, there might have been a player or a couple of players, but, you know, he might have played a bit more tactically in the last few months to win matches against open players. That's just smart.
Yeah.
But, you know, also can mix it on both ends of the table. Like,
on the centuries, it could be Matt Selt, actually, because he played out of the 365 days of the year, he played 340 days in Championship League, I think, last year.
There's a rumour going around he's still there.
Is he? He's just living in the car park in Leicester in his car.
In the car park, rocks in every day, waiting for Group 17 to start.
So we've got Judd Trump in fourth, Mark Selby fifth, Neil Robertson in sixth. Now, by Neil's incredibly high standards, he's had a bad season. And he's going to have an awful lot to defend in the next 12 months, isn't he?
An awful lot, yeah. And that's, you know, that's the way the rankings are set up at the moment, you know, with the money list. I think, as we've mentioned before, there is a bit of a backroom battle going on at the minute where, you know, the majority of the players think the rankings need changing back to a points-based system. Keep the money list for, you know, whatever you want to use it for. But, you know, the actual world rankings ought to be done on a points-based system. You know, Mark Selby gets to the final of the World Champs and goes down the rankings. That's peculiar. But, you know, it's not being changed yet. So as it is, that's just one of the small little idiosyncrasies of the system. But Neil Robertson has got nothing to prove to anybody. Yeah. You know, a poor season this year by his standards. And I'm sure he'll be back next season, back where he belongs.
It's funny, actually. Neil, for me, is in a very similar position to the position you were in at the start of last season, because he's earned so little. I think he's earned like 50,000-60,000 this season, which is a lot of money by anyone's standards. But when you look at his ranking points, he's on 542,000. So the vast majority of that came from the season before, which is the season that's going to come off in the next 12 months. You were the same at the start of this season. You know, the previous season, you'd done very little. So all your points were from the season before. They were all coming off. You've done very well this year. You know, let's be honest. You're in seventh in the world rankings, one behind Neil Robertson. And you had an awful lot to defend this season. You defended those points very, very well. And that's exactly what Neil needs to do this coming season.
Yeah, I'm really proud of what I achieved this year, because I think halfway through the year, if not more, my end of season ranking was projected at 38 or 39.
Yeah.
I was in free fall. And so to finish the season higher than I started it and projected into top seven, top eight in the world, with very little to defend next season, puts me in a really strong position. And I'm really proud of how myself and my team and friends and, you know, I've really rallied round. And you know, quietly, Team Murphy did a good job last season.
Absolutely. Not that quietly. You never do anything that quietly, Sean. Come on, let's be honest. Kyron Wilson in eighth, John Higgins in ninth. John Higgins at the Worlds, proving, if anyone was doubting him, that John is still very much a force to be reckoned with. And then Matt Williams, the Welsh potting machine, at number 10. The rankings are going to get a bit of a shake-up depending on what happens with the hearing of the regarding match fixing. You know, will those players be left in the rankings if they are banned? Won't they? I don't know. So that That will be to come, I am absolutely sure. Right, we've had a player who I won't name contact us to talk about social media and the abuse that players get on social media. Now, along with our listeners' question special, we are going to do a special on this because I think it's a big point that needs addressing properly. So we are going to do a special in the next month or two about the abuse players get on social media. So we will talk about that. Mark Selby talked about it during the Worlds. And as I said, we got a message from a player. I get an insight into some of the stuff that Sean gets. So we will do that coming up. But Sean,
I think in advance of that, though, just to give that a bit more, I think whilst people are listening to this, guys, you know, if you've got views on that, I'd be interested to get the views on it before we do that special, because, you know, there might be you listening out there now that thinks, well, yeah, no, that's terrible. Or you might actually be sat there thinking, well, no, you know, you get paid very well sometimes if you win. You are in the public eye. You don't have to go to work Monday to Friday, 8 till 5 and all the rest of it. You might think, no, you're fair game. You might think that being in the public eye and being on TV and playing sport for a living makes people like us fair game and up for attack. So be interesting to get people's take on it.
Yeah, at 147 pod, let us know. Let us know in advance of that and we'll put your thoughts into it. Why not? So, yeah, what do you think about social media and some of the abuse or comments that players get? Are you one of those people? Let us know at 147pod. Tell us why. You know, tell us your thinking on it. Now, so that's at 147pod if you'd like to message us, tweet us, Instagram us, whatever, about that. Sean, I am going to bypass your rant for this podcast, okay? Because it's the end of season and everything else.
It's a shame because I'm absolutely fuming about it.
Well, hold on to that fume for the next podcast and you can do it then. But right now, it is time for I can see you're amazed by that fanfare, right, Sean? No expense spent on the 147 podcast. I'm going to use it again. It's time for the first ever annual 147 podcast end of season awards. Now, we have several awards to give out. We just need to decide who we're going to give them to. So, first of all, we have the most improved player of the year. Who do you want to throw in the mix for this, Sean?
Goodness, the most improved player of the year. Well, I think we have to throw Si Jiahui in.
Si Jiahui has to be in there.
I think we have to throw Luca Brasil in there.
Luca Brasil.
I think we have to throw Rob Milkins.
Oh, Rob Milkins has to go in there. Pang Jung-su has to go in there.
Basically just naming everyone who's beaten me, Phil, that's all.
Yeah, absolutely. But do you know who I personally think should get it? I am going to put The Wind in there as the most improved player of the year. Jimmy, the whirlwind of Old London Town, White. He's my nod for this one. Most improved player. Look at what he's done. He's had a phenomenal season as Jimmy White. Absolutely phenomenal. So do you want to put anyone up against Jimmy White?
No, I get it. I completely get it. I'm happy to go with you.
He stayed on tour on the one-year list. He does not need his wild card now, which people talk a lot about those. Therefore, the 147 most improved player of the year is a whirlwind of Old London Town, Jimmy White. Well done, Jimmy. Next up then, young player of the year. Now, we need to define young.
Yes.
Young player of the year. Go on then. Who do you reckon, Sean?
Yeah, what age does young mean?
What, in snooker nowadays, anyone under 38?
Very good.
For me, this is Si Jiahui.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say Si Jiahui.
I think it has to be Si Jiahui. You know, there's some very good young players coming through. There's some very good young players out there. I don't think anyone deserves this more than Si Jiahui. He is a young player. He's got an awful lot of years ahead of him. Do you want to put anyone up against him or not?
No, I think he's the winner.
No, the 147 podcast young player of the year is China's Si Jiahui. Well done, Si. Next up then, we come to entertainer of the year. Mark Allen.
That's my award, isn't it?
Mark Allen, Mark Selby, who's having that?
Surely I win that.
Well, you're up there with the trousers. Let's be honest, those sparkly trousers.
Who else puts more into entertaining the crowd than me?
Rob Walker.
Who actually does more than that?
Rob Walker, come on.
Rob does put a lot in, to be fair. For 3 weeks of the year, he puts a lot in.
Oh, wow. You can't do that to him.
Well, it's true, though, isn't it? there's an award going on. I've gone super competitive. Rob is fantastic for 3 weeks of the year. I love Rob Walker, right? But you couldn't live with Rob. I feel for Mrs. Walker because he's like Tigger.
Oh.
At all times. And sometimes you just think you can't be that happy all the time.
I've said this before to people, okay? Rob Walker that you see on telly, that's Rob Walker. He's no different. He's no different on downtime. He's no different when he's going out for a walk. He's no different when he's sat in the media room. That's Rob. He literally has one speed and it's very, very fast.
Big shout out as well just to Rob whilst we're on here because he's doing a charity thing coming up in the next few weeks. He's running from Land's End to John O'Groats. And it's an incredible thing that he's doing in memory of fallen friends. He's lost a few friends in the last couple of years. He was doing something during the championships. He was buying a drink in honour of his mates for somebody in the crowd, giving them free drinks out and stuff just so they could have a drink and remember his. And, he does a lot of stuff, to coin the old Harry Enfield phrase. He does a lot of good work for charity.
Charity, man.
Doesn't like to talk. And he actually doesn't like to talk about it. He does a lot of these things that never make it to the public forum. But he is doing something that he's posted out on social media. I will be reposting it and getting involved.
Yeah.
It's a really lovely thing he's doing. Wish him all the best for that. But back to the important information, the award, the Entertainer of the Year.
Right.
In all seriousness. Who are we giving this to?
For me, it's Luca Brasil.
Yeah, no, I think the way he played. I think the way he played.
And he plays like that. That's how he plays. That's how he plays the game. And he's been doing it in tournaments all year. Like I said, he had the run to the final of the English. And he entertained throughout Sheffield. You know, he didn't just perform in one or two matches. He played like that right the way through. And it was amazing to watch. Absolutely amazing to watch. So, Sean, as much as I know it will hurt you not to win that award... Luca Brasil?
Just to be clear then, because it looks like I'm not going to get what I thought was my banker. as co-host of the podcast, and these are our awards, am I to assume I cannot win one of these awards?
Well, is that the way this is going? There's more awards to come.
If I'd won the World Championship, how would you have given it to Luca then?
Well, I'm actually going to nominate you in a future category, so just calm your jets a little
bit. Is there most handsome player of the year?
I'm not even going to comment on that. So Entertainer of the Year is Luca Brasil. Well done, Luca, the world champion. Next up, we have the Cliff Thorburn Special Award for Grinding. Now, I'm going to throw three players in this, okay?
Are they all Mark Allen?
Obviously, Mark Selby has to go in there, okay? And, yep, your man, the pistol, Mark Allen, also has to go in there. I'm going to put Anthony McGill in there as well because what is it about Sheffield and McGill? But he has that ability to do that. But I've got to say, I think you've hit the nail on the head. He's had some stick for it, but as you said before, he's winning matches, he's winning tournaments. He's had an amazing season and he's done it playing very, very, very good snooker. I think it's got to be Mark Allen.
Got to be Mark Allen. Absolutely got to be. The Cliff Thorburn Special Award for Grinding this year goes to Mark Allen.
And that's purely for his dancing. Okay.
Other dating apps are available.
Next up, in conjunction with Mac and Murph Exhibitions, which is Sean's new snooker, magic and music exhibitions that he's doing with his very good friend over in Ireland, the magic moment of the year. Now, I'm going to throw you moonwalking, okay? Your moonwalk was terrible, Sean, but you had a go at it. And it was a magic moment. It went all over social media. It got people talking. I've got to throw the moonwalk in Clandidno in there for the magic moment of the year. I think
I just have to jump in there and just say, because I was deeply embarrassed by my attempt at the moonwalk. I actually can moonwalk. Right? I would never have agreed to do it if I couldn't do it. But I got the first step wrong.
And the next one, and the one after that.
And like, you can't stop. The show must go on, mustn't it? I couldn't stop and say, can you reintroduce me? I'll get it right next time. I got the first step wrong. It turned into the moon shuffle. We all live to tell the tale.
It was a magic moment, okay? It was great. So that's got to be in there. The moonwalk's got to be in there. Kyron's 147 at the Crucible has to be in there. Selby's 147 at the Crucible has to be in there. I also want to put Mark Allen standing on Selby's shoulder at the end of a session as well. Because I thought that was brilliant. Selby's like looking at him and saying, what are you doing? I'm taking a shot, and Mark's just stood right next to him waiting to shake his hand.
That was funny as well. I'm going to have to be self-indulgent as well and throw my trick shot that I played in the semis of the Welsh opening, which went viral around the world. Everyone saying I didn't play it. I did play it. That's why I'm called the magician. And no one else can play these shots. So I'm putting that shot in there as well.
Sean, do you want the Magic Moment Award?
Do you know what? I do, but I think it should go to Mark Selby for the 147 in the World Championship final.
Does he have to share it with Kyron? Just to add insult to injury, not only do they have to split the 60 grand, but they've got to split the Mac and Murph exhibition's Magic Moment of the Year as well.
Who gets custody of the trophy?
Well, they can have it for 6 months each, can't they, I suppose? Or they've got to move in together, one or the other. Mm. Oh, go on then. Mark Selby and Kyron Wilson win Magic Moment of the Year for their 147s at the Crucible. Okay, next up we have Hairstyle of the Year. There's only one winner for this, for me.
Luca Brasel.
Oh. Well, he hasn't got any hair, for goodness sake. His head's on upside down. You can't give it to him. It's got to be Liam Highfield. It's got to be your old mate, Liam Highfield, the man of the Paisley waistcoats.
Has to be Liam Highfield. Yeah, whatever happened to the Paisley waistcoats, Liam? Where did they go?
I'm sure they'll be back next season, as will the bucket hat as well. That will be back next season.
I'm not sure about the bucket hat, but the barnet, the roof on Highfield.
Pure class. Hairstyle of the Year goes to Liam Highfield. And now our final award, it's the big one, isn't it? Player of the Year. The first annual 147 Podcast Awards Player of the Year. There's a couple of people that have got to go in this, okay? Mark Allen has to go in there. Mark Allen's had an incredible season, okay? Semi-finals of the Worlds. He won the Northern Ireland. He won the UK. Mark Allen has to be in there. For Player of the Year. Luca Brasel, world champion. Did he reach the final of the UKs? Am I right in that? Did Matt beat him in the final?
No.
He reached the final of the English.
A couple of years ago he did.
Yeah, final of the English. Luca Brasel has to be in there for Player of the Year. He's the world champion. Anyone else you want to put in there apart from yourself? Or do you want to put yourself in there?
No, I'm happy with those. I think it's a clear winner for me.
I think with wins in the Players and the Tour, I think you've got to be in there as a nomination, Sean.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're not winning it, obviously.
We've all assumed that.
But you're nominated. Go on then, Sean. You can call this one. The 147 Podcast Awards Player of the Year is...
For me, it's the pistol, Mark Allen.
It's got to be the pistol, Mark Allen. Agree. 100%. I think Luke has been amazing. He has. You've had a great season. But Mark Allen has to be Player of the Year. And do you know what? I wouldn't be at all shocked if he does it again next season either. Because the way he's finished the season, you know, he's got absolutely everything riding with him.
That's where we differ.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Mark Allen hasn't been to the semis of the World Championships for 14 years. He's seen more rarely in the championships than Halley's Comet.
And Luca Brasel had never won a match there before this season. You look at what Mark Allen's done in the season. I'll tell you now, he is going to roll into next season with bags of confidence. And he's going to be
Book Mark Allen in for the one table situation at the Crucible again for the year 2037.
I can't believe, by the way, you nicked my joke when the protesters did what they did. Because I text you saying, can't believe Mark Allen's made it to the one table setup again, finally. Next thing I know, you're going viral on social media putting that. I was like, wow, I gave you that on a plate and look at what you've done, passing it off as your own. Murphy, you're a disgrace.
Absolute disgrace. But do you know what I was pleased about was, and I hope she won't mind me saying this, but at the end of the BBC coverage this year, Hazel Irving closed the show with the phrase, and we're all living La Vida Luca.
Oh, nice. That came from you?
That was me.
A word on Hazel, by the way. Pure class. Oh. Pure class.
I mean, I think we are very lucky in snooker. I think all our broadcasting teams are really good. You know, yep. The guys at Eurosport, Radzi and Rachel and the pundits there. I think you move into ITV and you've got all the guys there with headed by Jill Douglas and the pundits with your Neil Foles and Hendries and Kens and McManus. You know, everyone who's on these teams. But if they were giving out awards for best broadcaster, it has to go to Hazel Irving. She is the absolute first lady of sporting broadcasting for me. She, watching her up close, the way she goes about it, her professionalism.
Yeah,
I've only ever seen her in absolutely perfect form. She the research she does, the information she has to hand. She is an incredible role model for anyone wanting to go in that world. And long may she continue to present the snooker. We're so lucky to have her.
Absolutely. She's absolutely pure class. Right, now, that was the 147 podcast. We are going to be coming back in the off-season with a couple of specials. We're going to do the specials we said about social media abuse of players, which I think is a massive point that really needs addressing properly. If you've got thoughts on that, please get in touch with us on social media at 147pod. We're going to do a special of listeners' questions. We've not asked any today, and we have got dozens. There's some really good ones in there as well. So we will get through as many questions as we can. Again, if you've got questions to add to that list, at 147pod across all forms of social media, we will answer as many as we can on the special that we're going to do. But we're going to round this podcast off, as we always do, with a pointless question. Now, this one is just for you, Sean. Okay, this has been sent in by a listener. The pointless question is, for the next 12 months, you have to choose one of the following. You are forced to watch every second of every Mark Allen match, or you draw Xi Jiahui in the first round of every ranking event. Which do you choose? This is evil.
That's mean, isn't it? Mean. I'd just like to point out, I don't even think Mark Allen's mum watches every minute of his matches.
Well, I know Mark Allen's mum, and I'm convinced you're right.
I think even she watches him. So I will have to choose drawing Xi Jiahui in the first round of all the ranking events. Now, it will mean an early bath, and I'll be back home very, very quickly from all these events, but you'd have to stick pins in your eyes rather than watch Mark Allen's first round matches, wouldn't you? I'd rather have gout. So
I can't believe you pulled gout out. Goodness me. Well, fans of Sean's commentary would be happy to hear that he's going to draw Xi Jiahui in the first round of every year tournament, because you'll get to hear him commentate more, which is always a good thing. Sean, the season is over. What are your plans? What are you doing?
Yeah, season's over, and you know, just hopefully there'll be some nice weather in the off season. Hopefully get the golf clubs out and try and rediscover the secret of finding those fairways. And it won't be very long before, you know, myself and the team start looking at, you know, what we did right this year, what we did wrong, and how we can improve going into the next season. And hopefully, you know, whatever it is that, you know, I think we found in the last few months, and I do think there have been some good discoveries that have helped me perform to a high level. You know, hopefully we can keep them going and improve on a few of the weaknesses, and hopefully next season will be even better than the one just gone.
Absolutely, and why not? Well, it's been a pleasure doing the 147 podcast with you this season. We are going to continue, as I said, in the off season, so keep an eye out for it. Let us know what your thoughts are about this podcast and others, and any questions you've got at 147pod across all forms of social media. But for now, bye, Sean.
Bye, Phil.
That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.